Hi.
Hey.
Now we're recording.
This is so exciting.
Good. I can't for the life of me ever get to the link to JJ's Zoom like right on time.
We've noticed. But it works out really well because it gives us a chance to talk about you before you show up.
Yeah. True. I mean, isn't it fair to always assume your friends are talking about you behind your back?
Absolutely. And the good thing is because JJ has to let you in, you can't surprise us by just showing up.
That's true.
So we have advance notice so we can quieten down or start saying nice things instead of mean things.
No.
Or vice versa.
I see you thought lead online. I know what you're saying.
And I always make sure that we capture the moments that you're testing your audio too, Broberg, for the recording, just because you got to make sure that everyone knows that recording is hard. It is very, very hard.
Yeah. And if you don't like JJ doing that, please let us know. We might change.
I mean, he doesn't listen to us when we say we don't like it. So why would he listen to you, dear listener?
That is a fantastic question.
Speaking of audio things, I'm just going to jump right in here and say, I just got a new phone. I got the Pixel 5. It's fine. It does what I need. Takes okay photos, makes okay phone calls, and it puts Instagram on a thing that I can look at and see like pornography of the food variety. And a couple of things came up. One is the copy my apps and settings is a lie. If you're lucky, you get your apps, but you never get the settings. And I think that's because they don't want you to have the settings because most of your settings are involved, are basically turning notifications off for their app.
Brutal.
So Twitter does not want me to retain the don't send me notifications setting. So of course they're not going to copy that across. And so I've sort of had that first week of a new phone, finding all the notifications that get popped up into my home screen and make noises and cleaning them out. And one thing I've been trying to do is my go-to for the last couple of years has just been my phone is always on silent. And that sometimes means I miss important calendar invites and stuff because my phone's not telling me about it. So I'm like, this time I'm not going to do that. So I've been really diligently trying to wean out things that try to be notifications and alerts that really shouldn't be notifications and alerts. And I've got that pretty much nailed, but there's the other category of things, which are things that make sounds that I never, ever, ever want to make sounds. And my perfect example is Instagram. I don't think I've ever seen an Instagram post or story that is better because it has sound.
the little videos. You're talking about the
And you know which
videos,
stories
right?
are the ones that have sound? All of the ads.
Oh, yeah.
Up happening is I see a bunch of people I know or don't know doing some stuff that I'm interested in. And then I get my ears blasted with an ad. Now, in the Instagram app, and this is on Android, I don't know if it's the same on iOS, I assume it is, you can turn sound off posts by just clicking a mute button on a post that makes sound.
Right.
So that's great. You can't do the same for stories. And so if you want to peruse Instagram stories, you end up hard muting your phone, and then you have to remember to de-hard mute it. Otherwise, you end up with your phone on mute for 3 weeks accidentally.
Oh, wait a minute. I loathe devices pinging and dinging and stealing my attention. And I've read a bunch about, the attention stealing architecture of that, that just pulls on every psychological root of our weakness of sunk cost and color, the gestalt of it, even attracting your eye, whether you like it or not. It's just, it's brutal, and it's designed to drive us, at least to attention, if not insane. But I'm pretty sure as an iOS user, if I mute the stories or if I mute the things in the feed, when I go into stories, it is also muted and vice versa or vice versa. I never know if it's vice versa or vice versa, but I digress. But I also always have my phone on mute. So I'm in your camp, Paul. That's pretty brutal. Maybe you should get an iPhone. I mean, I literally scan a little glowy ball and then all of a sudden my settings are identical. I'd then have to get like 80 pop-ups saying, this thing is asking for this, this thing's asking for that. But, you know, it sucks less.
I mean, overall, I enjoy the Android Pixel life.
Yeah. No, those are beautiful phones.
You know, there are just some things that are frustrating. And I was talking to Sean, dear Sean, and he said it's similar on iOS with Instagram stories. So
okay,
maybe he doesn't know the mute button that you know of, but I'll have to double check back on that on my phone, but I don't think it works that way.
You know what?
My phone have a setting to say, like, just never let Instagram make a single noise. Like, if Instagram was sensible about settings they let me choose, it wouldn't be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But because they're not, I'm like, well, if I could hard mute their sound, I would. And it feels like that's the sort of setting that you should have. And there's nothing worse than, like, if you're somewhere in public or even just at home and you want to have a quick look at like something and suddenly it starts blasting noise at you. I hate being that guy. I just saw that guy. I was getting my state inspection done for my car, and there was two of that guy in the waiting room, staring at their phones on full volume. One of I think was watching YouTube videos. The other one was listening to an Audible or some sort of story. And I'm like, who does, like? I mean, I know who does that. Like, old white guys do that. But at the same time, who does that? Like, who thinks they're so important that they can just, like, in a public place, blast noise, like personal noise? I don't know. It's just weird. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm the problem.
I mean, that's definitely true for some things. But in this particular case, yeah, no, I think the whole sound in public, like coming out of your device, like I have like a sensibility where I'm like, oh no, I should put headphones on and mute and be very courteous that way. And then I definitely see people walking around with things on speaker, like talking about their gallbladder surgery and their latest hemorrhoid. I'm like, maybe I'm just like, was taught to be more ashamed of myself and they're like liberated.
As a good Jewish boy.
Yeah.
And like, a good Catholic boy. We knew the value in always being ashamed of yourself.
Exactly. I should be hiding, not talking about this on full blast down the street. Yeah. JJ, how about you? Have you ever talked about weird stuff?
No, I was going to say my old madness. I still don't understand Instagram or TikTok. Like, I've tried. I would never actually install Instagram on my phone.
The fact that you put Instagram and TikTok in the same sentence definitely reveals old madness.
Yeah. But the irony is I'm supposed to start using, Clubhouse soon. Like, I've been asked to start like trying to engage in Clubhouse's community. So all of a sudden I'm like, well, I just skipped a couple generations of technology here. And I know we had a couple conversations about it recently about trying to use it, but now I feel like people have talked about this before. but so I'm going to be getting into that space now, but I'm assuming I have headphones on listening to Clubhouse. Like, I wouldn't put that on speakerphone, would I? That would be a dick thing to do, wouldn't it? I don't know.
I mean, it would be, but that wouldn't necessarily stop you doing it because you are an old white guy and it's your privilege. It's part of the privilege that comes with your skin color, sir.
Well, doesn't everybody want to listen to a bunch of tech bros talk about Kubernetes and how awesome it is?
I don't even want to do that.
Yeah, listen, there's some good hustle porn on there if you subscribe to the right channels. You like, really, if you're not a billionaire with at least 4 VCs in your inbox, like, are you even living?
Amazing. That was good.
Hey, now, speaking of TikToks, I actually put a link to a TikTok video, which was actually really hard to find because it's very rare that I see TikTok videos on TikTok, mostly because I don't have TikTok, but also like it's such
They're
a
published
thing that
everywhere.
Are publishing them, but never with links back to the original. They're always somehow like just stealing the video and like putting them in like Facebook's videos or whatever. But anyway, I found it. I want you to watch it because I feel like it is in our interest groups. And then
sound on or off.
I don't I don't know that it
matters. I turned the sound on. It is awful. Oh, this is disgusting.
Oh, what the fuck? Is it amazing? Oh my God. So, for the listeners, so this guy is eating like barbecue ribs, like you would speed eat corn on the cob. Is that a way to say it?
He's like doing the typewriter thing, like going across.
Yeah, the typewriter thing. Yep.
But all the ribs are still attached, so it looks more like. You know, like you have a big machine gun in a movie or something, or right. In the military, he's got the whole freaking set of it just laying down and he's pulling it up as he goes. There's another guy just staring at him like, no.
Yeah.
No.
So good. We'll put a link to that. But that really hit my funny bone. I was giggling and laughing at that.
Yeah, that was good. That was really gross. Wow, it's tough to
top that one.
Tough to recover.
Yeah.
Wait, what brought you to TikTok?
It wasn't TikTok. It was like a random video on Twitter or Facebook or something.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Yeah. And then so I went to TikTok and I was like, how do I find this? So I like start searching for like weird guy eating ribs and then found the guy's like handle, username, whatever, and search for that, and eventually got to it. But it was more difficult than it needed to be to find that video.
I think you're getting at something that is very real, that like all of a sudden software has gotten more difficult for me than it used to be. Like I felt like it was very intuitive for me to figure out the latest updates to whatever software I'm using, and it's not anymore. And I think it's just because I'm old. I don't think anything's changed externally, but I'm also seeing like everything's updated, right? So I'm like, mm-hmm. I think I'm empathizing with older people for the first time because I'm starting to become one. And you're like, my phone interface changed, and then every app I click in there changed, and then my web browser just changed, and Twitter decided to change, and Google changed, and well, Google hasn't changed, but just. All of it. It's a good reason to be more of a digital minimalist than I am, and I'm starting to consider it.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
When did the design decision of turning things bubbly become?
Yeah, bubbles are back.
Yeah, like when did that happen? Like it's like all of a sudden the hive mind was like square lines are no longer important. We need to have everything rounded and bubbles. And I know I sound like, you know, a curmudgeon or whatever, but like I always thought it was like boxes are easily like organized. Circles are not.
We have more pixels than we used to, JJ.
Oh.
we can do it. Yeah. You used to didn't have a choice, right? 16
exactly.
Bit. No.
800 by 600 is the only resolution I go in at anything. 800 by 600.
Exactly. Your monitor must be wild. But yeah, it does oscillate, right? Like I think it's design accompanies a lot of trends in technology where it goes from the really sharp edges to the really soft, to the really muted colors, to the really vibrant colors, from monolith to microservice, from big orgs to small orgs and back again. Like we have these cycles of, I don't know if we learn anything. Maybe sometimes we do, but one of my favorite quotes of this year is every time the pendulum swings, it brings new information. And I think about it in the context of this, like I feel like I've been in the tech industry long enough now, like when I see the swing happen again, I'm like, oh, okay, this is a little bit different because of X. It's a lot of the same, but it's different because of X or Y. Yeah, I don't know. How does that make you all think? You've seen some shit.
You just gave me the title of this this podcast, this episode. Every time the pendulum swings, it brings new information.
That is exactly what I said. Yeah. This is another meta podcast moment with JJ where I'm like, do I engage? Do I ignore it until he stops doing it?
Oh, no, I won't. Yeah. I won't stop. I'll keep going until somebody latches on.
So JJ, as an old person, have you ever really understood like the Twitter, like what was it, like moments or like trends or whatever? Have you ever like subscribed to them, or have you ever noticed?
Oh, yeah. So I tried doing those things for a while. The moments, so like to like they aggregate like a major news event or something like that, right? Yeah, I tried that for a while and realized they were dumb. So I stopped. Yeah. But I have really, really have fallen in love with lists. Twitter lists are Godsend. Super, super powerful.
I need to get better at that. But the reason I ask is I just happened to look across and like, I just had Twitter open in a web browser. And there is something trending, which I think you would appreciate. And Ted Cruz is trending right now under the term Fat Wolverine.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah,
that and works. If you look at like some of the videos of him, you're like, yeah, okay, I can see that.
Wolverine, like the animal or like the superhero?
The superhero.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Because I'm like, the animals are actually, they're pretty girthy. If you look at them, they've got some hips.
It's true. Crazy little bastards.
I should stop looking at Twitter while we're supposed to be talking.
Oh, no, that's not rude.
What's going on?
So I wanted to tell you,
I have a whole pile of rants lined up, so you all need to speak so we don't spend this an entire episode.
I got one. So I was looking at my notes and I wrote down 64 days till there was something coming out, and I was like, when did I write this down? I wrote this down this morning. Okay, because you know I lose track of time because you know time's irrelevant now, and I googled it and I figured out. Guess what comes out in 64 days? Fast and the Furious 9. Shall I continue? Yeah, we're gonna have a nice little countdown every week now, and I'm going to tell us how many more days until Fast and the Furious 9 is coming out.
This is the hill you die on. Okay.
Yes.
We all need one.
Well,
That could have been the name of the show, The Hill I Will Die On.
That was pretty good. I will say though, I did find out something very disappointing about it today, for our Fast and Furious. It's only in theaters. They're not releasing it online. I was very surprised about that, because I would imagine that Vin Diesel and the family would want us to be safe and not get COVID. So
I feel like that's an interesting one. I guess the other thing that jumps out was Tenet, right? That was a big theater only release where he was like, well, it's going to be so mind-blowingly awesome that you need to see it on the big screen. Whatever. Keep wanking, asshole. So, you know, his like artistic brilliance is more important than people's fucking lives. Like what the hell? Now I will say Fast and the Furious, they're probably right. Like the artistic brilliance in Fast and the Furious 9 definitely requires a theatrical release. Oh my God.
Only on the IMAX. Like why would you go to any other theater than the IMAX?
Of course.
I mean, come on now. Speaking of IMAX, John Cena.
Didn't they just announce a new one?
No.
Really? IMAX, the Big Apple event last week?
Oh, yeah.
IMAX. Sorry, just trying to pull a JJ level joke there.
Yeah.
It landed because.
Yeah, I know it landed.
We know it landed because we didn't notice.
That's my WWJJD.
Nice.
I wasn't paying attention. I think the hot take on Twitter is like, you know what people really need? Thinner IMAX. And like that was like a thought bubble to a product manager.
Yeah.
That's all I know, that we needed thinner IMAX.
That's pretty much all I got. And, you know, there was a point where, I'm trying to remember which it was, might have been the Lenovo ThinkPads, where they got so thin that they were basically unusable because if you touched them, they would break.
Right.
And they ended up making them less thin again. So I'm kind of thinking that unless we have a good source of unobtainium or whatever the fuck it is that Wolverine's bones are made out of.
Adamantium.
Adamantium, yeah.
God.
God, we're nerds.
No, God, you had to think about that?
God. I'm just glad that I know you so well I can get it wrong and get you mad at me.
Yeah, you nerd snipe me. Yeah. Oh, these are actually really beautiful IMAX. They're the opposite of the bubbly you were talking about. Yep. They're kind of squared off.
They did release the air tags, which I thought was initially a gimmick, right? And also, I thought you had to recharge them because if you have an Apple Watch, you know that your Apple Watch doesn't last more than 24 hours without recharging. But it turns out the AirTag really is just a battery-operated GPS locator that can sit inside of your Find My whatever system. So as soon as we start traveling again, I'm totally going to buy one and throw it in my bag so I always know where that is. And then my diabetes bag, the little diabetes with all my diabetic stuff inside of it.
Yeah.
I'm hella putting that in there. Because if I can hit a button on my phone and be like, where the hell is my shit? That's a pretty powerful thing.
This iMac link that you just sent, I gotta say this. It looks like a kid built a website on GeoCities and then had Steve Jobs do a design pass on it.
Are you saying you're not impressed with modern web design?
It's amazing.
It's damn right. Wait, so did neither of you ever use Tiles, like the little battery powered GPS trackers?
It was always too big for me.
Someone gave me one, I think, at a conference or something like that, and I never really used it because I think it was a little bit bulky,
yeah,
to be useful.
They came out with maybe like 4 years ago, they came out with one that was about the width of a credit card to put in your wallet, and I had it in my wallet and it's at a time where my brain was fried and it found my wallet for me more often than not. So yeah, I used that. I put it on my keys that had my my like car keys, because I could never end up finding those. So I was a big fan of theirs. The last time they died, I thought about how creepy it is. I'm sending all my GPS data to a company that doesn't already have it, but Apple already has it, right? So I'm just letting them continue to be creepy.
You know, you could put your wallet and your keys in the exact same place and never have to worry about this.
Says the guy that can't find his diabetes bag that his life literally depends on.
That's a good point. You're not wrong.
Touchy, sir. Touchy.
Touchy. Good God. Hey, well, I mean, you talked about going to the movies again. We're talking about traveling again. I think this is a good time to bring up just like the state of the state when it comes to where we all are on vaccinations. Because it's such a monumental time in human history in a very strange way. And I've just been trying to process that out loud. So where are you in your vaccination?
So I've been vaccinated for quite some time now. Like I'm probably 2 months into being like fully vaccinated because we managed to get pretty early on. But we still don't feel comfortable doing much because we're just going to end up with a variant that isn't being, that we're not getting protected by, because it's like there's still so much transmission and mutation going on. And so really, I don't think we've changed all that much. Certainly, I'm more open to like getting back to hanging out in someone's driveway with other folks that are also vaccinated or almost all vaccinated. Like that is a thing that I'm talking with people who are doing, and I've done once so far. I'm also actually going to I'm going to run down to H Mart and browse for a bit and buy some like random Shaoxing wine. I'm doing that and feeling pretty comfortable doing that. I mean, yes, I'm masked up. I'm cleaning my hands before I go in, cleaning my hands when I come out. I'm doing things like that again. Certainly not to what we were. I'm not running around like mouth kissing random strangers or anything. But
just friends.
Ever since I had that court date, I've been told I'm not allowed to do that anymore. Anyway. What about you, JJ?
So in my mind, the vaccine. Okay. So in my mind, our life has been like a game of Frogger, right? Where the little frog trying to cross the street. There's cars. We've been bouncing back and forth, doing all the stuff we got to do. The vaccine took apart half the cars, but we still have cars driving down the road, and we still can't get quite across it yet. Or we can if we're willing to do the dance. And that's kind of where I am mentally. I make a conscious effort to still social distance from people. I do go to like restaurants that have outdoor seating, or that have done like insane COVID practices, just because I'm a dad and sometimes it's really tiring to cook food for kids. And I want someone else to do it for me. I want to throw money at the problem so I can like not have to do it.
Fair, man. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, compared to a year ago, of course, like I'm nowhere near where that was there, but I'm still horrified of getting on a plane. I'm horrified of like, I realize my job requires me to travel, and there are people that are starting to talk about real conferences soon. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not ready to, there's too many vectors for me. Until I know that society isn't dumb anymore, which might be hard.
The society being dumb, that's a bigger umbrella focus. Yeah. I'm halfway through getting one of the mRNA shots. So my final one is next week. They had to push it out 4 weeks. So both mRNA are somewhere in the 80 to 90% efficacy after just the first one in 2 weeks. So I know I'm like already in a very safe place. And that is, I'm paying more attention to how it feels. And like, I didn't realize how much tension I was feeling all the time. Like I hated going anywhere. The grocery shopping once a month, I was just whole body tense. Like, don't come near me. I don't even make eye contact with people as much as I used to. Or like, you know me, I'm annoyingly friendly. Like, Minnesota is perfect for me. Like, people just talk to each other for no reason, and that's great. Yeah, I just found like I'd lost that for good reason. Like I had a lot of concern, and that concern is by no means 100% gone, but like I still go grocery shopping with two masks on just because that's CDC recommendation and it's not that much of an inconvenience to me.
But when you say two masks, are you talking like an N95 plus something, or are you talking about two non-N95s?
So I know no one in my network that has had access to N95s for personal. A lot of people have KN95, right, which look similar but don't have the same medical testing and seal that guarantees that you are breathing only through the front of the mask. So a lot of people feel like they're safer than they actually are because of a naming convention and just... FYI, in case that is misunderstood, but no, I've got a KN95, which is, they're okay. They still have breathable pockets on the side, less so than like just a plain mask. And then I put a cloth one on top and wash that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's felt solid. I definitely feel less tense and less stressed. With my whole friend group is vaccinated now. We're still like not doing a big gathering. In person indoors, in person outdoors, like we already did that last summer and feel foolish in retrospect, but this summer we definitely will do that. And got two close friends who, like, I'm helping my buddy get his condo ready to sell. So like I'm in his house for like 6 hours as we were breaking something down and tiling, and we weren't wearing masks. And I'm not terribly worried because, like, he's vaccinated, I'm vaccinated, we're only in that space. It feels, when I do the probability of it, like the actual math of the probability, it's so unlikely that it's not impossible, but it's so unlikely. And now I know if I get it, it's will be less, like, less health risk in the long run.
So there's also they're not sure of, like, because the vaccine doesn't stop you from getting it. It helps you in fighting it off, right? So there's that. I think there's still a question of, like, if you get it, even though you're fighting it off, can you still be you still transmit it in that time? And so that's another thing that I'm trying to keep in mind of, just because I'm vaccinated doesn't mean I can't potentially get it and give it to someone, even if I don't get a full-on, like, infection myself.
Right. So there's a couple really interesting nuances there, but go for it, JJ.
I was going to say, so you're supposed to turn down your cell phone speaker when you're listening to something too? I'm making the joke that I'm an old white guy and I don't care that I'm a vector.
Shut up, JJ. I've run out of patience.
As we just discovered, your jokes only work when I'm telling them.
That's true. I guess
that was funny. Okay, so the thing with the transmission. So four of my friends in the Twin Cities are doctors, and we talk about this way too much. The thing that was really cool to learn. Yes. Like, somebody who's vaccinated can be exposed to COVID, give it to somebody else. But there's still research in how, and it's very, very unlikely that it's due to somebody with COVID coughing on that person and then you coming, touching their arm, and then licking it. It would have to be within, like, less than an hour or so before the virus will die on the surface. So, like, that's why I didn't really catch this news until later, but it's completely okay to, like, pet other people's dogs and stuff, because you're not going to get it from that dog having it on them. Like, that is a near impossibility. And that's why we could stop, like, wiping down our groceries, because even if somebody coughed on it, it's like, if you left it out for 20 minutes, stuff's dead, you're fine. The incredible edge case, which we all know in technology, edge cases at scale happen. But the edge case would be, like, if you had COVID, I didn't, you, like, sneezed or coughed, it went into, like, my nose cavity, and I am still less likely to get it. So I could even be resistant to it. But then if I sneeze near JJ, he could get it.
Right.
It's like super crazy freaking probability math. Like,
yeah.
But it's possible, and that is enough to care, especially if somebody in one of your loved ones are more vulnerable to it. Like, I would be very different if I lived near my parents right now.
Yeah.
So it's mitigating reasonable risk now, is what you're saying. We should still mitigate, but again, it's like when I was talking to my mom the other day. Think about it. We used to blow out candles on cakes up until last year.
We never go back to that.
Yeah. Well, and then she looked at me. She's like, "You're right." And then I was like, "Yeah, that's disgusting. It's a vector." And she's like, "Oh my God, I never thought of it that way." And it's true, right? Like,
it's like baby birding food is a for, like, my birthday tradition is I bite the cake and then I feed it to you in my mouth, like, and then you feed JJ and then he feeds it back. It's just tradition. It's just a little tradition my family has.
It sounds like fun.
It would be pretty funny. But yeah, you're totally right, JJ. And I am by no means advising people on drawing their own line of what comfort is right now. But I am, like, hell-bent on talking through the data and the fear. Because, like, we will naturally hold on to the scariest thing. We're all more scared of a plane crashing than we were of a car accident, despite the exponential likelihood you'll die in a car accident compared to a plane, and the safety records of both.
Well, thanks. Now I'm scared of cars.
Good.
Don't worry about fans. Fans are pretty scary too. They kill a lot of people. And
hippos. Hippos.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh yeah. I do spend a lot of time thinking about hippopotamuses.
And rattlesnakes in Texas.
Yeah. I can never figure out. The hippopotamus is the one, it's the side of the triangle opposite the corner.
Yeah, oh, exactly. Boo. Nailed it. Yeah. That's a cute joke.
Yeah.
Or was I being too obtuse for JJ?
No. I got it too. Like my brain is mush right now. Great.
So regular JJ Brown.
Right. It's tapioca JJ.
Tapioca pudding.
Oh man. Yeah. Okay.
I like tapioca pudding. It's quite delicious.
I can't remember the last time I had it. Is it good?
It's super high in carbs. Like insanely high.
There's actually a Vietnamese tapioca pudding that's like a it's got bananas and a few other things through it, and it is delicious.
Bananas are gross.
You are gross.
So every time I accidentally eat an overripe banana, I won't eat bananas for months. Like, that's the thing. But when they're normal ripeness or like maybe even pre-ripe, I love that flavor and texture so much.
I don't hate a squishy banana. Like, I'll eat a squishy banana.
Like, I put half a banana in a huge smoothie with like fresh coconut and frozen mango and fresh strawberries. Mm. And all I could taste was like this slightly nauseating sweetness of that banana.
Well, I won't tell you about how I purposefully over-ripen bananas and then ferment them and turn them into banana pudding then. You might not
know. That sounds fascinating. Does it end up like adding some acidity from the fermentation, or
it's really just trying to really push that like overripe banana flavor hard, like you know like banana bread or whatever, you sort of have that particular overripe banana kind of undercurrent.
Oh, that's a great point though, because bread really absorbs it well. Like, or I think distributes the flavor well.
And so does like banana pudding, pudding, which is what I usually do. Like all the sugar and custard and jello and other stuff that goes into it. I think it gives a similar thing to banana bread where it kind of mutes it a little bit. So maybe that's why I'm then pushing it further.
Team banana.
Mm-hmm. Hey, well, speaking of which, pineapples. So our grocery store, when we do pickup, will randomly put fruits or vegetables in. And they're usually either very under or a little bit overripe. So I think it's just their kind of way to deal with excess stock or whatever. They're like, here, have some free fruit. And last week was a very underripe pineapple. And so it sat on the bench for a week and it was finally hit ripe. But we don't really eat a lot of pineapple. So I'm making what's called tepeche, which, am I saying that right, JJ? I thought you might know it. So it's a Mexican
carne asada. Carne asada.
Shut up.
Cerveza. Shut up, JJ.
I love my faux frustration with JJ. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a Mexican fermented pineapple drink.
Oh. Ooh.
And so it kind of gets a little bit bubbly and a little bit funky. And you basically take your pineapple, and you can use the whole pineapple cut up, or you can just use like the rind. Mm-hmm. If you're just trying to get to the flavor out. So you do, what I do is I'll skin them, and I won't get like, I'll leave plenty of flesh on the skin. And then also the core, I'll give it a pretty rough chop and I'll throw it in with half a gallon of water, a bit of sugar, and some cinnamon and stuff. And then you just leave it out for a couple of days.
No fucking way.
And you get this like slightly fizzy, pineapple-y like soda type drink.
Really?
It's pretty delicious.
Dude, write that down or send us a link. I'm happy to mess with that this week.
And then with the actual flesh, I cubed it up and I put it in my oven at 225 convection, which is about what you'd get out of an air fryer for like maybe 30 minutes on like a tray with a like a a great thing that sits above and holds it up, whatever you call it. Yeah. And that's exactly it. And I think that's the recipe I use. I've used it before as well. And so we end up with these slightly caramelized, slightly dried, like pineapple bites that are pretty delicious.
Huh.
And you can kind of just leave them in the fridge and snack on them a bit. And I'll probably use them as garnish for the tepeche when it's ready.
Yeah.
And in fact, if I bet you if I froze them, they would make really tasty, like ice cubey, keep the drink coldy kind of things.
Nice. Well, I feel like a freaking caveman with my pineapple now. I just cut it up and eat it. I think fresh pineapple is one of my favorite fruits by far. Red grapes fall behind fresh red raspberries, and then third is pineapple.
The sugar, the pilocilio sugar.
Talk to us about that real quick. It's a Mexican form of sugar that comes usually in like the shape of a cone. It's like all compressed together, and you like shave it or grate it or break it up. Or if you're cooking with it, you can just do it in chunks and let it melt. Mm-hmm. It's very similar to palm sugar. If you've cooked Thai before, and really you can get by with like light brown sugar or even like regular sugar if you care. There's certainly some like earthy undertones you get from it, but I just use a mix of soft brown sugar and regular caster sugar to kind of get close to what that is.
Yeah, I've used that sugar twice in two other recipes before. One, I tried to brew a beer with it. And then I also made some Affelwein with it as the agent to activate the yeast on both. And it was disgusting.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Yeah. It was bad. It was bad.
I've never used anything like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess like it's a precursor to like beer and all that sort of stuff, right? Because you're effectively fermenting it to the point where it starts to like release some, was it carbon dioxide, make it carbonated, but it's not enough sugar there to sort of be converted into anything super alcoholic. And I think before it gets alcoholic enough, it's probably going to turn into vinegar. And it's actually clearly you need yeast. I'm not adding yeast, so there's needs to be enough yeast in the fruit or the air that around you, which so far I've had pretty good success with that.
Reading through the recipe, it looked exactly like the Affelwein I used to do, which was basically four ingredients: champagne yeast, a massive amount of sugar, yeast nutrient, which is in essence basically the equivalent of putting a child into a candy store and telling them they can eat everything they needed to, was the way the brewmaster talked to me about it. And then 5 gallons of natural apple juice and let it sit there for a month, come back a month later and drink a little bit and you're sloshed, like legit sloshed. That shit was strong.
Why have you never made it for me?
Well, because I had it at the other house. I got rid of all my brewing equipment. Yeah.
So there's also a Ukrainian drink. Well, I mean, it's Eastern European in general. It's not just Ukrainian, called kvass.
Vodka. It's called vodka.
And it's made in a similar way, except it's made with like leftover stale bread, usually like a dark rye bread, as kind of the source of like sugars and stuff to be broken down and fermented. And it is delicious. It doesn't sound delicious when I describe it like this, but it is like if you mixed Coke with soy sauce, but in a good way.
Interesting.
No.
Well, I mean, like it's when we learned how baijiu was made, right? That shit's basically like what is it? Like grain and dirt, and it comes out with this amazing booze.
Isn't that dirt? Oh my God.
It was like they put a bunch, they make like the mud, like,
well, it's a dry ferment rather than a wet ferment.
Yeah.
So it's not like like making beer and like even making vodka and stuff, you kind of ferment in a lot of water. whereas they're fermenting in a minimum amount of water. And that's the difference. There's no mud. I mean, it may be made in like a clay container, or it might be, but they're not like literally adding dirt to it.
I swear I saw that video. Was like the dude was like using a pitchfork with a bunch of mud moving. Yeah, I have a very bad memory. I have a very bad
memory. I mean, it could be that they like would traditionally just brew it in like a dugout hole in the ground.
Maybe.
And yeah, okay, there's going to be some dirt and mud at the bottom of that. But I don't think they're actively using dirt as an ingredient.
Find your most decadent of soils. Right. sprinkle a pinch on top.
I mean, that you would certainly taste the terroir if you were doing that.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to find that video now.
So what else is going on? Have we talked about tech stuff yet?
We talked about design, allegedly. Not really.
JJ, don't you have like some...
Don't you have a day job?
...updates for us or something?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Didn't you discover that the thing you told us was serverless wasn't really serverless or something?
Yeah.
Is that what's going on?
So
did someone get mad at you because we got it wrong?
Yeah, no, not exactly directly mad at me. It was more like, it's a good way of describing this. I came at the wrong angle of trying to understand the difference between FaaS, or functions as a service, and serverless, which is, I guess, serverless. So there's an actual line here. In my mind, there wasn't, right? They're just in generally, like, I assume something like Lambda or Code Engine or OpenFaaS were kind of all in the same ecosystem, right? Like, that's what I thought. So I spent all my time in OpenFaaS land trying to understand serverless. But in that branch or in that process, I learned why FaaS or functions as a service exists. So the idea with FaaS specifically is that you're supposed to have, in essence, a simple function, not like an application, but a simple function that like changes data of some sort of one another and hands it off to something else. And it has a built-in framework already to run that function. Take Node, for instance, it can run your app.js that is just one file that does one thing. Serverless, on the other hand, is so much more, where you have to build it from the ground up. It's almost, in essence, it becomes running the container, right? Where you don't have that framework already there. You need to know what version of Node you want to run, or what version of Python you want to run, and there's an actual line there. So you can't take something from the FaaS world and just jump it into serverless because you don't know how the FaaS system or the framework that they have created works inside of the unopinionated serverless ecosystem. Does that make sense?
So would it be fair to say that FaaS is an opinionated implementation of serverless? So if you productize serverless,
so it's inside the Venn diagram. Effectively
making a FaaS.
So it's inside the Venn diagram of serverless.
I don't know. I'm not drawing diagrams. What are you talking about?
Well, it's how I think in Venn diagrams, right? Where you were saying,
the only way I think everything has to fit into a Venn diagram, or I don't understand it.
We're back to Venn diagram.
That explains so much about JJ right now.
So FaaS is a subset of serverless, in that by saying, because it's an opinionated version of serverless. So it lives inside the serverless ecosystem.
Okay, so all FaaS is serverless, but not all serverless is FaaS.
Yes. And so my problem was, is I thought there was an intersection, right? I thought there's an intersection between it, where not thinking that it was fully inside of the server. Like, I thought you could take serverless and put it inside of FaaS, but you can't necessarily. No, wait, no.
Well, so let me take a step back while you're like redrawing Venn diagrams inside your head, which now I know that's how you do it. I can actually see it happening in your eyes, and it's terrifying.
Yeah.
So I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, but Amazon effectively coined the term serverless. And they coined the term serverless to talk about Lambda. And Lambda is FaZ.
It started as just the functional front-end side of the FaZ, right? I don't believe there was this distinction of front-end, back-end before.
Right. And so, like, the original serverless was, we'll run a Python for you when an event happens.
That's my understanding. Yeah.
Other people, and then people started using it, and people started doing things like, well, let's call Python to download a Node app and then like wrap that Node command inside of a Python exec. And suddenly we're like, okay, now we're running Node apps inside of it, right? And so Amazon's like, well, let's start supporting more languages. Let's start supporting containers.
Yes.
Like random containers. And that's also about the time when like FaZ became a thing on like bring your own like platforms like Kubernetes, like OpenShift, like Cloud Foundry and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so those were all like, well, we don't all know what you want to run. So just give us a container and an eventing system and we'll try to run the container when we see an event.
Yeah.
And that sort of became the serverless paradigm. But I feel like that's still like open, like
it still all sounds like bullshit until we get specific. And right. that's where I'm at. I think what I'm starting to wrap my head around is I believe there are different levels of pre-baked variable sets in like a user space environment. Is what I'm trying to think of is like,
describe the Venn diagram for me.
So you have an operating system, which is the big circle. It's less a Venn diagram. And then like in the Venn diagram of an operating system, there is some user space. It's separated. It. Yeah. Okay. That's great. No, I like this new JJ logic. This is fun.
It's all circles everywhere.
Yeah. Like, it's like I want to run this thing. I don't want to provision a server for it. I don't want to know what kind of container you may run for it, because provisioning a container can feel just like provisioning a server if you don't want to manage this stuff. It's like, how little can I manage and still get something to do something? And I keep thinking, like, is this just like a pipe function on any like command line? Is this like, are we just GNUing the shit out of data, but with in a more structured event-driven paradigm? But I'm already getting into nonsense words unless you get specific. Back to the original thought, I think it's like a user space that you can borrow, and there are different assumptions depending on who's defining that space. And that's pretty cool. It still doesn't go as far as I want it to, but that's kind of cool.
But to yes and your journey there.
Yeah.
The pipe analogy is really, really good in the FaZ ecosystem, because the idea of FaZ is that the function really does one thing and one thing well. And what does the pipe give us on the command line? The ability to pipe a lot of one things who do one thing really well and give it to something else. So if you abstract your mind from doing the command line pipey GNU thing, and decide to make it as a bunch of functions through REST calls, that is an accurate description, in my opinion, of FaZ. That is an accurate description if you're trying to make a correlation connection.
Yeah. So I feel like there's a certain amount of complexity that works with. And there's a certain amount of complexity that it starts really falling apart with. So thinking about your like command line pipes, you can like cat sed orc, right? But if you start doing much more than that, you're going to reach for Perl or you're going to reach for Python.
And I'm not.
You're going to write a script. And I feel like it's a little bit the same with serverless and or functions as a service. You're going to do one or two things and much more than that. And the complexity will get enough that it might be worth writing an app to do it.
I think an hour ago, I was proving to you that I would still do a bunch of bash commands to make this happen.
It's not a bash command, really.
It's a Unix pipe.
That's true. That is true. All right, fine. That's true. A bash script. Sorry. I was using bash script. Anyway, sorry, Robert.
Well, pipe is a utility that the bash operating environment, which is technically a programming language, can implement. Yeah. Right. So fun. Anyway, before we die on that hill, I guess I'm just surprised. This could be the dumbest thing said today, but I'm surprised that serverless didn't end up falling into the microservice paradigm. Like,
you tried.
Like, it did? Okay.
Well, hang on. I think what happened was the microservice paradigms tried to say, well, this is just what we do, but smaller again. I think the thing that was missed was the real, like the, I don't know, the strength in just the batch processing of it. And I feel like serverless Lambda, like functions as a service or whatever, I've kind of lost what I was saying. You know what? Never mind. Edit this out or leave it in. I don't know, but I've totally lost what I was saying.
I feel like that's the conversation in a nutshell. It just feels like fucking gobbledygook. This is a good point to ask. If you listen to the show, thank you. And if you are the kind of person that wants to school us on this in a kind way, reasonably kind, there's a lot of room there. We'd love to have you hop on and provide more context here. But hopefully, if you're listening and you're like, I don't know what serverless is, I hope you feel very comforted, because I feel like three of us are reasonably intelligent, have been around, are paid better than we maybe should be at times, and we can't define this shit for the life of us.
I gotta say, every time I look at like an architectural diagram for a serverless like application, as in like a series of things that are doing something productive, it always ends up being like, wow, that's a lot of things I have to keep track of and know that's happening in a very particular order. And it's unobvious where to discover how it's running, where it's running, which bit it broke at. And I know there was it IO Pipes? What was the, there was a startup Erica Windisch ran that she attempted to solve that problem and got acquired. And I can't remember how far along that team got, but I feel like that was part of the thing they were trying to solve, was like, how do we actually monitor this stuff, and how do we make sure it's doing what it's supposed to be doing? And maybe how do we visualize it?
Isn't that
otherwise, Istio? I feel like if your serverless application resembles an OpenStack architecture diagram,
there's something wrong.
That's exactly it, man. Yeah, that's the thing that blows my mind. I feel like if you decompose what you need down to like truly component parts, like if you can explain what you're doing there, you're probably doing it right, which is some like a feature of this I really like. But it also just looks tedious anytime I see even a moderately complex system.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's better tooling that you just don't see, but every time I've looked at doing something in Lambda, it's like you open up the AWS GUI and it's like, upload the zip file containing your Python from this button. And I'm like, oh my God, what? And I'm sure there's like, I don't know, do we have GitOps for serverless? I'm sure we do. And there's ways to do that. But again, it's just adding to like, where is it coming from? How's it getting there? Is it up to date?
Yeah, like, it doesn't fix packaging. That's a great summary. Yeah, great point, Paul.
Thank you for actually saying what I was trying to say in like three words when I was saying like 150.
Well, no, I got obsessed with this problem when I realized like how cool that Spaces in the Go community, as they're trying to figure out what the appropriate package management paradigm is for there and how they could improve from Python, improve from others. And it's just the least trivial part of technology in a very real way.
I gotta say, I don't write a lot of Go, and it feels like every time I write Go, there's a brand new and completely different dependency manager that I have to deal with.
I bowed out a couple of years ago, and I tried to run a script I wrote before, and I can't get it to load, so I just rewrote it in Python.
Yeah.
Womp womp. One day. Sorry, Steve Francia. He's a good friend who's the product manager at Go. For Go. Well, we have certainly wandered. That was a good rant. I hope somebody takes us up on this challenge / omission of ignorance and joins us. But on a very fun front, any good cooking plans?
So I think I just told you my cooking plan.
Oh, yeah, you did.
And so I'm going to give you a food rant instead.
Do it.
And that is, if you are a delivery-only food company, you've got 3 fucking jobs. Make tasty food, close the fucking lids, and deliver that food. And so there's a local company that actually before COVID was like, hey, we need to have a good locally owned delivery food service. And they're doing all the right things, except their food is super bland. Mm. And like, it's a struggle because like, I want to support a local company that's saying, hey, like Uber Eats is a bane on society for any number of reasons. We're going to create a company that delivers our own food. We're going to pay everyone a living wage. There's going to be no tipping and it's all going to be great. And then the food is bland. And then today I gave them another shot because I accidentally was roasting them on a friend's Facebook feed who was friends with the owner. And the guy is like, hey, what don't you like? I'm like,
Oh no.
He's like,
just give us another shot. It's been a while. And so I gave him another shot. And I got to say, the food was still super bland. And not a single one of the lids was closed properly. And so there was this pool of like oily, liquidy shit on the bottom, in the bottom of the bag and on the bottom of every single container in the bag. And that's like 2 out of 3 of your jobs you've failed.
Paul, I'm so sorry, man. That sounds...
I mean, of all the problems I can have, like that's, you know, it's nice that that's the biggest problem of my day.
I do have one counterpoint. There's an exception to the close the lid properly. And I ordered what I can't stop saying is the perfect crispy chicken sandwich. And it was in like one of the little, like probably like a 4-cup kind of side. So little clamshell thing for sandwiches. It didn't actually fit. The crispy chicken side of it was like, you know, billowing out the sides, muffin topping, if you will, around the outside of it. But they close it enough where the brioche bun and everything was still warm and the chicken in the center was still warm. And I bit right into the crispiest, most delicious chicken sandwich because it couldn't get soggy because it wasn't closed in like a plastic container, which is just death to crispy.
Well, I mean, it's like in context. Like if you're
absolutely,
if it's fried chicken, don't close it in a closed container.
And more just wanted to brag on that chicken. Yeah, that's good chicken.
But that does sound amazing.
Yeah, you would like this place. So cooking wise, yeah, what have I been? I made mapo probably for the last time if my wife is home. She's, I did everything to make it less spicy, use more tomato paste instead of the fermented chili. I threw in some miso instead, so I cut it down to a third and it was still just like blisteringly hot for her. And, you know, just win some, you lose some, man. Okay. But I think I haven't made ramen in way too long. So I think I need to get a bowl of ramen going, start soaking some ajitama and maybe I'm kind of in the mood to make some chashu again too. So I think I'm going to get the gang back together and make, I don't know. I want to mess around with like a really clean shoyu broth. But like, I just don't find it tastes as good. So I'm realizing like, I just want to be the fat American who likes his thick broth that, with miso in it, and go to town. So, JJ?
Hey, I did learn a tip before JJ goes. I'll throw this little tip in.
Yeah.
If you're cooking a burger at home and you want to put bacon on that burger, get your strip of bacon and fold the two ends up to make a point so it looks like a little triangle, and then cook it as that triangle. And then it's about the right shape to fit inside the bun.
Oh, brilliant.
That's clever.
Now, JJ.
So, for the first time ever, yesterday, me and my wife made a homemade chicken soup, or at least for the first time I ever did chicken noodle soup from scratch. Yeah. I've just never done it before. And I had some homemade bread with it, and it was pretty damn good.
Nice.
And then, the extra bit of the rotisserie chicken we had, we threw into the crock pot. And now we have a good amount of chicken broth from it too, that we can turn into chicken noodle soup. So it's a nice little circle of life there.
Very cool. And now what kind of noodles did you make?
Oh, it was just like some egg noodles from someplace.
Okay. So I thought you said you made it from scratch. My bad.
That's from scratch to me. That's from scratch to me.
Burn.
Yeah. By the way, believe it or not,
God, I'm on fire.
Just for Matt. Just
the
just to
third
get that
degree burn
Matt.
On this.
That was so good.
I do want to throw this out there. So I actually started tracking some information about our little podcast here. If you didn't know, this is episode 314. So that's good.
Wow, we've already done 314?
No, it's the
it's
third season.
It's been a
season.
Long pandemic.
Yeah, right. So third season since we've changed our name, moved away from Cote.
Wait,
so
we do seasons? Well,
I do.
Let them finish.
All right.
Yeah. I do all the fucking legwork. Leave me alone.
There you go.
Yeah. So, so I'm going to start trying to mention at least this once during the podcast. So if people are listening out of order, they kind of know where we are and why it's going where it is. I know we do post to a lot of the different podcasting systems out there. I only link to the Spotify one because that one gives us me the most information. But if you, as Broberger was asking earlier, if you want to join us or have a conversation, I would love to know where you are coming from and listening to, just so I can start looking there too. Because I know we actually do have people listening. And if you've gotten to this far, thank you again. But I would love to get some of that feedback so we can start pulling some of that information and helping out our audience.
Neato.
Yeah.
Thanks for the legwork, JJ.
Yes, thank you, JJ. I wasn't giving you crap. I was like, literally, I didn't know we did seasons.
Yeah, we've had this conversation twice.
It was a little column A, a little column B.
Yes, we really have.
We need to stop We need to stop doing our planning drunk.
Yeah, I know. anyway, all right, gentlemen. I think it's time to say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.